Astronaut Scott Kelly on inspiration, knowledge, and the value of science.
I found myself in space doing science, and it's a place that I never thought I could aspire to.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Scott Kelly is an astronaut and engineer who's gone into space four times, including a nearly year-long stay on the International Space Station, the longest stay in space for an American astronaut. The goal was to understand how the human body adapts to space. Kelly's twin brother, Mark, also an astronaut, was on the ground then so that NASA could compare changes to Scott's body with his identical twin. Just a fun, crazy, extreme science experiment. And now Scott Kelly is retired, and he's making the rounds with 3M, makers of Post-it notes and electronic circuits and healthcare software. The company has a new report out this week called the State of Science Index. Scott Kelly joins me now. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, Molly.
So tell me first, what made you join forces with 3M? Is this what retired astronauts get to do?
Yeah, hopefully, sometimes. I mean, they reached out to me with the study that they conducted, and being a person who believes in science and science education and an advocate for science, I thought it was a good fit for me to help them promote their message and their study, because there's a lot of very interesting things in there, things that surprised me. And, you know, I would like to, you know, and I hope I can get the message out.
What surprised you the most?
Well, that 40% of people surveyed, and these were from 14 different countries around the world, believe that if science didn't exist, that their lives would be no different than they are today, which I was shocked, because it seems to me like everything that we have is due to science.
Well, and one other startling number was that nearly a third of the people in the survey said that only geniuses can have a career in science. Why do you think that perception, either of those perceptions, exists?
You know, maybe I'm not positive, but maybe it's because the, you know, the scientists that are held out to, you know, as an example in our society are people like, you know, Albert Einstein and Galileo and Newton. I mean, the scientists that people can recall in a lot of cases perhaps were geniuses. But I think I'm a good example of a guy that was, you know, far from a genius, that was a bad student, someone who couldn't pay attention to his homework. And I found some inspiration at the age of 18. I was able to change my life around and my education around to where, you know, 18 years later, after, you know, I found my inspiration, which was from the book The Right Stuff, I found myself in space doing science, and it's a place that I never thought I could aspire to, but a great example of how someone that, you know, you might be the most unexpected person ever to be a scientist or involved in science with a little bit of inspiration, a lot of hard work, can, you know, have these kind of opportunities like I had.
Let's talk about you for a minute. It's been 2 years about since you landed on Earth after spending almost a year in space. What do you miss?
From being in space? What do I miss?
Yeah.
Two things primarily. I miss my fellow crewmates. Actually, one of them is in space now. He didn't stay there. He just flew again very quickly. Most of the other ones, or all the other ones, are currently on Earth, but I don't get to see them very much. So, you know, I miss the relationships, the people. But also the work, you know, something that is very technically challenging, something that has significant consequences if you don't do it properly, something that has to, you have to pay a lot of attention, or you could be risking your life if you do it incorrectly, and then working as part of a team, not just the people in space, but also the people on the ground doing something that, you know, people, you know, just a, you know, a few decades prior thought was, you know, impossible. And, you know, the satisfaction you just get from doing something very, very challenging, working hard at it, being successful, that's what I miss the most.
And you were really, you know, back to that question of inspiration, I've been following you on Instagram for a really long time, including up when you were on the space station. Do you feel like you're a little, that you you know, do you ever internalize the reality that, like, you could be that guy that by being so public, by using social media so well, that you could become that sort of spokesperson for science or that inspiration?
What do you mean? Do I rationalize it? Like,
yeah, like, does it hit home? Does it? Do you ever think, oh, that's me?
I kind of look at myself as like a below average guy doing a slightly above average job. So, yeah, when I look in the mirror, I just see someone that resembles my brother Mark. yeah, I don't see any kind of like, you know, I don't think I have much of an ego, and I'm just happy to be here. And if I can get the message out that, you know, science is important, science education is really important to our future, and if a guy like me can do it, so can you.
Well, let's since you brought up your twin brother, who is also an astronaut, let's talk about this twin study that you've both participated in, because you're selling yourself short a little bit. You've made some pretty major sacrifices for science. You know, you did this twin study that looked at the effect of space on the human body, your time in space compared to your brother's. And some preliminary results found that it did affect the biological makeup of your cells, your cognitive response time. Do you notice any difference?
I didn't notice that, any changes in that regard with my cognitive ability. But I did read in a newspaper the other day, about a week ago, that 7% of my DNA had changed permanently. And I'm reading that, I'm like, huh,
whoa,
that's weird.
That seems intense. Also, it feels like somebody else should have told you that, maybe.
Yeah, they probably tried to get in touch with me, and I probably didn't answer the phone or something.
But how do you feel about that? Do you feel like that sacrifice, those trade-offs with your physical health are worth it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know, you know, when you fly in space and do things like that, risky things, as a rational person, you know, I recognize that there are risks. You know, there's risks of blowing up. There's risk of, you know, having the space station get hit by orbital debris. There's risk of the radiation causing permanent damage to anyone who flies in space or is a radiation worker, that radiation could potentially kill them. You hopefully understand the risk, and you rationalize that against the importance of what you're doing. That, you know, that's something that astronauts do kind of at an extreme level, but, you know, other people do that too. You know, every day we walk out of our house, we're exposing ourselves to risk, but, you know, you decide, you know, the risk of driving to work is worth it because you have to get to work. My work just happened to be in space, and I thought what I was doing was important enough to risk my life to do it, whether that risk manifested itself, which it didn't, luckily, in the rocket blowing up. But, you know, it could manifest itself later in my life, you know, in the form of, you know, getting cancer, as an example, as a result of it. But it's not something I dwell on.
When you look at sort of the next generation, the ones that you're trying to get excited about science, the ones who will hopefully still want to be astronauts, they're going to be looking at, you know, Mars, right? Like one-way trips to Mars. I mean, how do you inspire that generation, and what kind of challenges are the next generation of astronauts going to face?
So I would inspire them to sign up for the two-way trip to Mars. The second part of that trip, that's the most important part.
Mm-hmm.
It's not getting there. It's getting back. I hope that when we do send people to Mars, we'll consider the ethical nature of sending people on a one-way trip and decide it's not a good idea. Having spent a year on the space station, I would not want to spend the rest of my life in a enclosed environment like that. Maybe there are people that are more... you know, could handle that better than I might be able to. I like Earth. But what I would say to kids that hopefully will have the opportunity to go to Mars someday, man, if I could trade places with you, I'd do it in a second, as long as I could come home.
Yeah. I'm trying to get my kids sold on it, too.
Because you want to get rid of them? Or you just want them to...
No, I just, you know... I want to live vicariously on Mars briefly. But, well, so we're at this time now where the private sector is playing this much bigger role in the exploration of outer space. They may be focused on profit over scientific research or even ethics. You know, what potential dangers do you see in that trend?
You know, NASA's been partnering with the private sector since it began. It's nothing new. I think the way we do it now with companies like Orbital ATK that provides a cargo ship to the space station or SpaceX is a little bit different than the traditional model. And the way it's different is NASA gives them money, gives them a set of requirements, and then lets them go and figure it out. And that's kind of what private space, I think, is how it differs from what it was during the space shuttle days, as an example. You know, Rockwell built the space shuttle. NASA didn't build the space shuttle. And Rockwell was a publicly, you know, traded company, but people would refer to it as like a private entity. In other words, it's not the government that was building it. So, you know, this partnership with industry has existed for as long as the space program's been around. But what we're doing now is it's just being done a little bit differently. The idea of privatizing the space station, like the whole thing, just giving it over to some other organization to operate is challenging. I think it's going to be a challenging thing to do. Certainly privatizing certain aspects of it makes sense. But the whole thing is I'm not sure if the cost of doing that is going to be a cost that a company is willing to bear for, you know, the near-term financial returns you could get out of it. I just don't really see it, but maybe I'm wrong.
I want to return to science for one quick minute. As you mentioned, the numbers in this study do show a really big disconnect between the public and science and the public not understanding the importance of it. What do you see as the risks of that?
There are incredible risks. I mean, we have challenges in front of us, as you always do. I mean, every generation has their own challenges. But, you know, over the course of the next 30 years, the planet's population is going to get to 9 billion people. And that has implications on the environment, on, you know, food and water availability, energy availability, all of those issues that we are going to continue to have with an expanding global population are issues and problems that will be solved with science. So we need kids in this country and around the world believing that science can solve problems that are going to exist in their future and for their children and grandchildren. And then there are opportunities for them to be a part of it. And that's what's, you know, this survey is trying to show, is that there are misconceptions out there regarding science, but there's also opportunities. And, you know, if you're even if you're not a genius, even if you're an average student, even a below average student like myself, you find some inspiration, you work hard, and you can be part of the solution versus part of the problem.
That's astronaut, engineer, and science spokesperson Scott Kelly. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Oh, thank you, Molly.
And it is International Women's Day with a space tie-in. Mattel this week announced that it will make a Barbie out of NASA mathematician Katherine Johnson. She was portrayed in the movie Hidden Figures about the African-American women who were instrumental in the early days of the U.S. space race. Johnson is one of three historical women who will get Barbie-fied as part of the company's Barbie-inspiring women line. Worth noting here, Lego also has a set of minifigures celebrating the women of NASA. It sold out 24 hours after its release. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.